Hey everybody, it's Andy. Before we jump into today's podcast, I want to tell you about a great leadership development opportunity for you and for your entire team. LeaderCast Live is the largest one-day leadership event, get this, in the world, and it broadcasts every year from Atlanta to over 100,000 people in hundreds of locations around the world. In fact, in just a minute, I'll tell you how you can be one of those locations. At the 2017 event, which will be May the 5th, right here in Atlanta, LeaderCast will bring together world-renowned leaders to highlight how teams can inspire extraordinary results and how leaders can inspire extraordinary results from their organizations. I will be joined by behavioral science expert and best-selling author Daniel Pink, whose book Drive was such a phenomenal book. We led our entire leadership team through that book. Also, former top sports agent and author Molly Fletcher will be there, along with a host of others. Now, to learn how you and your team can attend LeaderCast Live in Atlanta, or how you could be a host for a simulcast site for your organization, just go to leadercast.com/live, leadercast.com/live. And if you act now, you'll be able to take advantage of some early bird pricing. Hope to see you May the 5th at LeaderCast Live.
Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we'll conclude a conversation around the building blocks of a compelling vision. Andy, we kicked off this conversation last month, and it's based on your amazing book, Visioneering, that has just been re-released. What led you to write this book?
Well, as I mentioned last month, our organization had just begun. And as a leader, I felt like I needed to teach leadership. And one of the big parts of leadership is vision. Mm-hmm. And I just begun reading this, you know, fantastic story of Nehemiah, a Jewish leader back in the 5th century B.C., who had this extraordinary challenge to go back to the city of Jerusalem and rebuild walls around a city that no one wanted walls built around, not even the people who lived there. So he has to show up and cast a compelling vision to the people who lived in this broken-down city. And the story is so extraordinary, and I just found principle after principle after principle in that story that I integrated into my own personal leadership. Then I began to teach that, and then eventually published the book Visioneering. And the book has continued to sell, you know, for these 17 or 18 years, however long it's been. And so the publisher came back and said, hey, can we update some of this? You know, in the book, your kids are 5 and 7 years old, and now they're graduating from college. So I had the distinct privilege working with Susie Gray to go back and look at some of the content, update some of it. And the interesting thing was, as I began to read back through my own book, and this sounds so strange, I found myself thinking, this is great stuff, and I need to reread this book. And really, it's not because I wrote it. It's because the content that comes straight out of this extraordinary leader's experience is so rich, and it, you know, it passes the, you know, the test of time. So I love the fact that I was able to republish the book, but also that we're going to be able to talk about some of those building blocks that I talk about in Visioneering.
Well, Andy, just to get this conversation started, when you talk about vision, what are you saying?
The definition I arrived at is a vision is a mental picture of what could be fueled by the passion that it should be. It's a mental picture of what could be. It's a preferred future. And the thing that I do in the book and the thing that we do around here all the time is we tell people everybody has a vision. Vision is not an organizational thing. It's certainly not limited to our profession. We have a vision for our kids, for our grandkids. We have a vision for our professional lives. We have a vision for ourselves financially. Everybody can answer the question, what do you want the future to look like? What do you hope? Where do you hope to be financially 5 years from now? Where do you hope to be relationally? So every single person on the planet, because we've been gifted with the ability to imagine, and having been gifted with the ability to imagine, to think forward, everybody has some sort of mental picture of what could be and should be. So this is a very big topic that really pertains to everybody, especially parents and especially people who are trying to lead anything or, you know, get something specific accomplished. But it's just a mental picture, what could be, fueled by the passion that it should be, and then from there, things begin to change.
Landy, in the book, you outlined 20 building blocks for a compelling vision, and we looked at 3 last month. We're going to look at 3 this month, so let's just jump in. You wrote, visions thrive in an environment of unity. They die in an environment of division. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, in this section of the book, I talk specifically about the importance of alignment as it relates to a group of people who are trying to accomplish a specific thing. And that can be a husband and wife as they think about how to parent, or it can be the alignment within an organization. We've all heard stories or perhaps worked for a boss who gives lip service to the corporate mission statement and vision, but then works behind the scenes to make sure nobody looks better than he does, so there's a lack of alignment. Or in a marriage, someone who has agreed in theory with their, you know, partner to establish a certain environment in the home, a certain pace, a rhythm in the home. But in practice, they feel like their spouse is sort of working towards something entirely different, something that centers around his or her wants and wishes rather than, you know, what they felt like early on was best for the whole family. So when individuals function from the standpoint of self-promotion, self-protection, alignment to vision evaporates. Whether it's in a family, business, a sports team, things get out of alignment. And when things are out of alignment, it is very difficult to pursue vision. And it's very difficult for vision to become a reality. So alignment is critical to the success of a vision.
Andy, those are great illustrations. So, but what does the behavior look like?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we all know, you know, when there's a lack of alignment within an organization, somebody is trying to control rather than serve. And here's the extraordinary thing. When two or three people or a team of people really are committed to a vision, everybody collaborates. I mean, collaboration happens naturally. Collaboration happens easily. But in an environment where there's a lack of alignment, somebody somewhere in that family or that organization is trying to control rather than serve the purposes, you know, the general purposes of the family or the organization. In an organization where there's a lack of alignment, there's high manipulation. People manipulate other people in order, you know, to accomplish their own agendas. People exhibit an unwillingness to resolve their differences face-to-face. Mm. If you work in an environment where it's just email, 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 and so-and-so told me to tell you, and there's a, you know, resistance to face-to-face confrontation, I guarantee you that's in an organization or division or department where there is not alignment around an idea. And what happens in those organizations, we've talked a little bit about this, is that slowly, because of that unwillingness to work out personal conflict, the organization, whether, again, it's the division, a department, an entire organization, they turn their back to the marketplace. And the energy gets eaten up with this inner turmoil within organization. In family, it looks like this. You know, when a mom and dad don't get along, essentially over time, they turn their back on their kids. And they don't mean to. But again, when there's a lack of alignment, everything bogs down. Lots of sideways energy and very low efficiency.
And Andy, as we both know, this takes a toll on relationships.
Yeah. And again, if there's relational conflict within an organization or a family unit, you're not going to make progress. And vision is all about progress. Mm-hmm. And organizational vision is always about change. And again, there's so much sideways energy. There's so much energy eaten up within the internal conflict. And so people, they exhibit an unwillingness to believe the best about other teammates, which makes collaboration almost impossible. And you know you've reached the bottom when people on a team begin to view other team members' failures as their own personal success.
Yeah.
When people begin to rejoice over the fact that, hey, you know, it didn't work out, they didn't make their numbers, their product had problems, the software had bugs, and even though I'm working for this company, it sort of makes me feel better about myself that they failed, then, you know, there's not only not going to be any collaboration, the vision is grinding to a halt. And again, we've raised kids. We've seen this within our family when, you know, one of our kids can't wait to tell us about their brother or their sister doing something wrong. Right. You realize there's something wrong with this picture. You know, you're giving yourself credit for the fact that someone else failed.
Right.
That is human nature, but it comes back to the responsibility of a leader to cast a vision that's so compelling that, again, as we said last month, people are willing to forego some things in order to accomplish one thing. And oftentimes, it's forego personal gain in order to accomplish something that everyone is committed to accomplishing.
Okay, Andy, so what's the key then to avoiding misalignment?
Well, first of all, I think those of us in leadership, whether, again, it's family, business, whatever it might be, we have to own that. My natural tendency is to look at the person or the group that's creating a lack of alignment and just blaming them or blaming mm-hmm. human nature or whatever it might be. But ultimately, somewhere along the way, they've lost sight of the vision or they've lost sight of the importance of the vision. They've lost sight of the win for the team. In other words, I have to step back and say, okay, where have I failed and what can I do to refocus the team before I start blaming people for what is just human nature? And the other thing, and every leader in our audience understands this is not a one-time fix. Every organization, like the front end of every one of our cars, is work slowly working its way out of alignment. Mm. It is just a fact of life, and it is a fact of leadership. So from time to time, when we feel the front end getting a little bit wobbly, we can't ignore it. Alignment never, ever fixes itself in our cars or our organizations. But again, the tendency as a leader, I'm going 100 miles an hour, I got so many things going on, I just want to ignore that, I want to pretend like that didn't happen. Right. But, you know, again, just like with any piece of machinery, when things get out of alignment, it's less efficient, and over time, it breaks. So I think leaders have to pay attention to this. I think leaders have to be quick to look in the mirror before they look out the window, as Jim Collins talks about. And then from time to time, we just need to realize, I haven't failed as a leader. This is just the nature of leadership. Vision leaks, people forget, people are people, and every once in a while we have to step back in and say what we feel like we have said 1,000 times. And this is one of the challenges of leadership, is I find myself thinking, wait, haven't I already said that? And the answer is yes, you've said it, but you haven't said it enough, you haven't said it to that group,
right,
and you haven't said it in a long time. So again, this is just a reality of leadership, keeping things aligned. And as always, you know, one of our responsibilities as leaders is to model the way. So we are not immune from creating a lack of alignment in our own organizations. And the reason we know that is probably most of us have worked for bosses who did that very same thing. Mm-hmm. It's what I mentioned earlier, where, you know, somebody gets up and casts this compelling vision and mission, here's what we're going to do. And then you watch their personal behavior and you think, wait a minute, I'm outworking you. I think I'm more committed to your vision than you are. So for leaders, lead, don't control. You know, be a person of integrity, resolve your differences face-to-face, and believe the best about others. And again, by modeling the way. And when we do that, people pick up on that. Mm. They know that we have a low tolerance for blame. We have a low tolerance for bickering. And we have a low tolerance for celebrating the failures of other people on the team.
Andy, that sets us up for the next building block from Visioneering. You wrote, abandon the vision before you abandon your moral authority.
Yeah, this is a tough thing. And maybe the phrase moral authority isn't something that everybody in our audience is familiar with. Your moral authority is that thing about you personally that makes you a leader worth following. It's your character. It's the fact that you do what you say that you're going to do. It's the fact that you put other people first. It's the thing that makes you, that really makes you a leader worth following. A vision does not make a leader worth following. Mm. Moral authority and character is what makes a leader worth following. In fact, there are many examples of extraordinary leaders that people have followed who had no character, no moral authority, and led individuals, organizations, and nations in a terrible direction. So moral authority is not critical. It's not even necessary for visionary leadership. But it is absolutely necessary for the leader that wants to be a leader worth following. So we must maintain our moral authority at all costs. As a visionary, it's our primary point of leverage. Without it, we're no longer a leader worth following. At that point, we're just simply using our position. And great leaders rarely leverage their position. Great leaders leverage their character and leverage their authenticity. So the problem with ever making a decision, even when we're trying to accomplish something good or worthwhile or that will make the world a better place, we have to be so careful that in our passion to do whatever it is we want to do, that we not cross those lines where we're dishonest or where we allow an end to justify a means that, again, you know, we wouldn't want our kids to do. In fact, we've taught our kids not to do that, not to say those kinds of things,
right,
not to lie, and yet, you know, we're so passionate about this vision. And this happens all the time. So I say to leaders, hey, in the midst of the day-to-day, in the midst of the big decisions, and especially when you bump up against an obstacle, because it's when we bump up against obstacles that we are most tempted to sacrifice our character, to sacrifice our moral authority for the sake of progress. But once we cross certain lines, you can't go back. And again, a reputation is a very difficult thing to develop in terms of a good reputation. It is so easily lost. And once we lose that, then we have to revert to giftedness and position. And that's a tough position to lead for, especially if you're asking people to make a sacrifice. So the point is, pay attention to your moral authority. Pay attention to those environments where you are tempted to compromise, even for good things. But at the end of the day, you've lost some credibility with the people that you have asked to follow you.
Andy, in the book Visioneering, you give us three elements of moral authority. Talk about those.
Yeah, moral authority requires three things. We've talked about one: character, sacrifice, and ultimately time. My personal definition for character is simply this: it is the will to do what is right as God defines right. It's just the will. It's not just knowing what's right. It is the will. It's being willing to do what's right as God defines what is right. And the issue here really is surrender. Am I willing to surrender to what I don't necessarily want to do in order to do the right thing? And everybody has this struggle. Everybody lives with that tension. And everybody knows how it feels when you come out on the other side of a tough decision and you've maintained your integrity. And all of us know how difficult it is to follow a leader who has sacrificed their integrity. So, you know, character is an essential requirement. And the second piece is sacrifice. As we discussed last month, a vision by its very nature always requires resources that are not readily available. Ultimately, it requires sacrifice. And, you know, the man or woman who champions a vision has to be willing to step up to the plate and demonstrate a willingness to sacrifice. That is what gives us moral authority. The fact that I said to our entire organization, I'm going to go without a salary, that gave me moral authority with the people that I was asking, you know, to contribute. And the last element, strangely enough, is time. Moral authority is not achieved overnight. It's not something you can manufacture at will. You know, as we think about the people that we have extraordinary respect for, these are people whose morality and character has been tested by time. You don't have moral authority at 18 years old, or maybe even at 20 years old, except perhaps within the context of a very small group of people who know what you've gone through and know what you've overcome. Moral authority takes time. And it's developed, it's really developed through a proper response to circumstances over which, you know, we have no control. So yeah, when we talk about moral authority, we're talking about our character, our integrity, sacrifice, and time.
Andy, the final building block from Visioneering that we're going to look at in this podcast is maintaining a vision requires adherence to a set of core beliefs and behaviors.
Yeah, and a few years after we began talking about this, Jim Collins came along in Built to Last and talked about this idea of preserve the core. So if you've read Built to Last, this is the same thing. It's discovering that short list of behaviors, that short list of values or beliefs that are core, not to everyone's life, but are core to the specific vision that we're trying to accomplish. Anybody who's been in leadership for very long knows, basically through observation and experience, that behavioral boundaries, the way we behave around each other, must be maintained to protect the integrity of a vision. When you find an organization or even a family that's all about accomplishing something specific, there is a set of behaviors. And in fact, we spent a couple of podcasts talking about our staff behaviors because a few years ago we recognized, you know what, there are some things that if everybody will do these six things, we're going to get the job done.
Right.
So we identified those, we taught those, we defined those. And so this is what this is about. Anytime, again, whether it's family or organization, there are some things that if everybody does these things and every behavior is tied to some sort of belief, but believing doesn't get much done. It's the behavior that matters. So identifying those core sets of behaviors and beliefs and then blending those into the fabric and to the culture of the organization makes a huge difference. And it's absolutely critical if a vision is going to be accomplished. A few minutes ago, we were discussing the importance of alignment and unity. And again, alignment within the organization is usually alignment around not simply the vision statement, but alignment around these core beliefs and these core behaviors. And once those are defined, Lane, and we've seen this around here, these beliefs and behaviors, they establish expectations among team members. This is just what we expect people to do. This is how I expect to be treated. This is how I expect people to respond. I expect people to ask me difficult questions. We expect orchestration, evaluation, you know, all the, and collaboration. We expect those things. And then when those core beliefs or values are violated or abandoned by somebody in the organization, everybody stops and looks up. It's just so unusual.
Andy, I know that defining these core beliefs and behaviors is a big topic, but do you have any tips or best practices that help in the process?
Here's two questions. And again, these are the pesky questions that all of us who are in leadership hate because it sounds like a homework assignment. But, you know, that's what we're doing this for.
Right.
And these are the things that take us back to, you know, basics oftentimes as a leadership. But here's a couple of questions. What could we do that if done consistently would provide the greatest potential for our success? What could we do? You know, this is a behavior. What could we do that if we all did this consistently would provide extraordinary or, you know, gives us the greatest potential for our success. And when you ask that question, again, there are 20 things or 100 things, but what are those core things? That if this was what we came to work to do, if this is how we treated customers, if this is what we did when we were brainstorming, you know, whatever it might be, what could we do that would give us, you know, give us the most potential for success? The second question is this: what could we do that would guarantee we never see our vision materialize? You know, what's a behavior that if everybody in the organization drifted toward this behavior, we would never accomplish whatever it is that we want to accomplish? Because again, when you establish those things and when you name those things, you know, for our kids growing up, we only had two rules in our home: respect mom and don't tell a lie. That was it. Those were our two rules. And early on, I would talk to my kids and I would say, look, here's why lying is the worst thing you can do. And I painted this picture of here's what happens in a relationship and here's what happens in a family. If you want to undermine the success of this family, just tell a lie, because it destroys and undermines relationships. So anytime we would talk about lying, you know, I painted this picture. Here is a behavior we can never drift toward because it's the end. Well, in organizational life, there are two or three behaviors, and lying is certainly one of those, or that, you know, I think stating those and setting those out there as sort of outposts to say, hey, when you begin moving in this direction or your organization or division or department begins to embrace one of these behaviors, understand this isn't just a bad thing. You've just lit the fuse on our failure. It's critical. So what are the behaviors that would just about guarantee success? What are the behaviors that would undermine success?
Andy, one of the things that I've seen in our organization is the fact that we have these core staff beliefs, these behaviors. In those times when someone has to be called into account, there's really not a lot of question about why. It's just a matter of addressing it because we've already established the standard.
Yeah, we've established expectations. We collaborate here. We make it better here. We take it personally here. So absolutely. And again, the more they're defined, the easier they are to teach and talk about, and the quicker people recognize they've moved outside the parameters of what this organization is really all about. And this, going back to our general topic, this is so critical to being successful in accomplishing a vision. I mean, it is absolutely mission and vision critical to establish these behaviors, to establish these beliefs, and then again, talk about them in such a way that people know this is what we do, this is how we do it here, this is why we do it here, and this is what's at stake if we don't get this right.
Andy, thanks so much for today. And to all of our listeners, we want to thank you for joining us, and we want to encourage you to go to andystanley.com/visioneering, where you can download a free chapter of Andy's amazing book, Visioneering, and begin your journey to your personal vision.